Blog Talk Radio.
In the beginning was the beat, and the beat was the rhythm of God, and the rhythm of God is the harmony of humanity, and where there is harmony, there is peace.
Vasco da Gama, yeah,
well,
off the mainland slightly.
Yeah, okay. Well, very soon you become a fisherman, I think.
Very possible.
Yeah. Let me welcome our guest for tonight. Good evening and welcome to the live broadcast, Mrs. Chanda.
Good evening, thank you, and I'm glad to be your guest this evening.
Well, first and foremost, I don't know how to actually address a police officer on this show, whether to call you Charity or Mrs. Charity Munganga Chanda, or address you by your rank, which I don't know. I know that you've got those things on your shoulders, on your collars. I don't know what that means. What would you address?
My full name is Charity Munganga Chanda.
Yeah.
And my rank is Assistant Commissioner of Police. I'm the police spokesperson for the Zambia Police Service.
That is a very big position. So, well, we're not going to call you Mwami, but Mrs. Chanda or Mrs. Munganga Chanda, that is a very household name in Zambia, but our listenership is actually worldwide. Some people may not know who this Charity Munganga Chanda is. Who exactly are you, and how did you get to where you are? Because you look pretty young, sorry to say, and that's a very high bar.
Well, I'm a Zambian, as you may all be aware. I completed my secondary school education over 20 years ago, and I joined the Zambia Police in 2002. After graduating from the University of Namibia, where I studied media studies. After that, I joined as a direct entry assistant superintendent, and I went through police training for 9 months at our college called Lilai Police Training College. After that, I was sent to the southern part of the country where I did my internship. Thereafter, I became an officer in charge of a police station called Libuyu Police Station, that is in Livingstone, that is the tourist capital of Zambia. Now, because I did media studies, the then Inspector General of Police identified me from the southern part of the country where I was working and brought me to the Public Relations Department, where I joined as an assistant public relations officer. After that, I started editing the police news magazine, which is the quarterly magazine. We basically talk about what is happening in the police, and we inform the members of the public so that they know, and in the process, it bridges the gap between the police and the community. After editing the magazine, I went to Sudan, where I was attached to the United Nations as a UNPO, that is UN Police. I was there for about 1 year, 6 months, and I came back to Zambia, and I was attached to the task against corruption. Now, the task force was eventually dissolved, and I got back to the Zambia Police as the deputy spokesperson. And in 2013, I was appointed as Zambia Police spokesperson, and of course, that goes with the rank. That's how I was promoted to the rank of Assistant Commissioner of Police, and that's what I'm still in.
Yeah, congratulations and very well done. I mean, a lot of people, I think, especially the young officers, will look up to you and probably want to emulate what you've achieved. So it's actually safe to call to say that you're a police officer as well as a journalist.
Yes, I am.
Which one comes first? Are you a journalist?
I am a police officer as well as a journalist. And I didn't just venture into journalism, because for my master's, I did peace and security from the University of Lusaka, and I graduated last year.
Right.
So that was really to get me closer to the kind of work that I do.
All right, that's great. Well done once again. Yeah, we invited you tonight to actually discuss what's happening in Lusaka first and foremost. I mean, Lusaka residents are currently living in fear, especially around George Compound, Matero, Liranda, and Zingalume, because of the unusual murders which have actually happened in the recent past. I think there's a total of 6 people killed so far in a very bizarre circumstances. I mean, as a police service,
let me correct you. It's not 6. The people that died in the same circumstances are 5. Those with missing body parts, they were 5 and not 6.
Okay, thank you for the correction. But nevertheless, as a police service, what are you doing to reassure the population, apart from the old tired tune of the police are investigating?
Okay. In the first place, even before the murders, in the first place, let me clarify about the ritual murders and the murders. In our Zambian law, we don't have a section which says this is a ritual murder and this is an ordinary murder. For us, a murder is a murder despite the circumstances under which a person is killed, and we investigate them as such. So for us, there's no ritual murder. It's just a murder. So even before those four, the first four were killed like about a month ago now, and then 2 weeks later, the fifth person was found without a heart, the ears, and eyes. But the first four had their hearts. What was missing were the ears and the private parts. Yeah. So even before that, we were conducting our patrols in Lusaka. We realized Lusaka is a big, big city, and most of these compounds, like the compounds that we just mentioned, are densely populated. So what we've done as Zambia Police is we've divided Lusaka into four zones. And these four zones are being manned by our general duty officers as well as our combatants. And not only that, we realize that as police, our numbers are quite low. We are about 17,400 police officers against the population of about 13,000. So what we've done is we have recruits on training. So we've incorporated those recruits just to enhance our manpower in these operations. So those zones that I spoke to initially are led by officers of the ranks of inspector and above. And then they've got officers under them. So what they do is they move in groups of about five or six. They go into different directions to patrol the areas, more especially at night, because we realize that these murders, most of them happen at night. So they patrol throughout the night. They go into the field at 18 hours and leave the field at 6 o'clock in the morning. Now, during these patrols are not just done by police officers, no. We also have members of the community out there who are members of the Neighborhood Watch Association. So these are the people who also accompany us in these patrols. The patrols have been successful in that, as much as we've had these murders happening, but we've been able to keep most of the criminal activities that have been happening in Lusaka. But then what else we are doing is that as Zambia Police, we cannot be everywhere at once. You know, we may be patrolling in George Compound. You mentioned George Compound. It's one of the densely populated compounds where one of those murders happened. The moment we leave, say, a section and get to the next one, you'll find that maybe at the point where we've just left, the criminals strike. So what we've done is we've incorporated most of these people in most of the programs that we do. As Zambia Police, we've come up with crime corners. We call them crime corners. These are the programs that we've come up with where we sensitize people on how to take care of themselves, how to work with the police, and how they can help us in making sure that we enhance security in these compounds. And we're not just concentrating on the compounds, but we are also doing highway patrols. These are done through foot patrols, and others are also motorized.
Mr. Chanda, it's good to hear that you are doing you're carrying out patrols, and that was going to be a question somewhere down the line. But there's always been complaints by people that there is no police visibility in the communities. The only time you see the police is during roadblocks, as well as when the president is actually passing through an area. And so does it mean that the Zambians who complain about the lack of police visibility are not telling the truth?
That may not be true, because every compound, each and every compound in Lusaka has either a police station or a police post. In areas where we don't have police posts, I'll give an example of Zingalume compound, where the police, the community police post was tossed down by members of the community after the first four were murdered. In that area, we cannot operate in that area anymore, because that the building was demolished. So all we are doing now is just to concentrate on the patrols. We don't have a permanent shelter there. But because the people around that area have realized our importance, what they've done is they've mobilized themselves, they've mobilized resources from the business community, and they're renovating the same building that they touched down, because they would want us to get back to the community. Now, when it comes to the issue of us just being visible when conducting roadblocks and when the president is passing, anyway, it's our responsibility to provide security to our Republican president that we cannot run away from. But that is not a sole responsibility in itself. We also have the responsibility to provide security to the people of Zambia, so every member of the community. So what we do is, if they don't see us in uniform, we have officers out there who go on patrol in cities, in civilian clothes. Why we use them is because they would want to, they would go out there in the field to look for information, because we realize that there are some members of the community who cannot just come out voluntarily to give out the information to the police. So some of these police officers go out in the field, they mingle with the members of the community, and it's through that they get to get information about what is happening in the communities, about who these criminals are, about how these same criminals can be cornered. And through that, we've managed to operate. And it's not just something that has just been introduced now. It has always been happening. The only difference is now, because of these murders that have been going on, we've increased on the numbers. So when they don't see us in uniform, let them know that they are members of the police force, the police service, that are within them, who are sniffing around for information.
Now, you know, I was last in George Compound probably a good 35, 40 years ago. That is not to tell you my age, but at the time, George Compound was quite George Compound was quite a large area, and I believe it's even bigger now. And one of the complaints that have been received about, you know, from the residents of George Compound is that George Compound is very big and it only has a police post. Isn't it time such areas had a full-fledged police station?
Well, that really doesn't matter, because what we've done is, despite it having the police post, that is George Compound police post, just last week there were officers who were deployed at some primary schools. Unfortunately, I can't remember their name. Those are paramilitary officers, and they're permanently there. Their job is to patrol day and night. So for those that feel that they are far from the police post, they can still walk over to the primary school where the officers are camped to lodge their complaints or to give us information that can help with the apprehension of the perpetrators. But not only that, I'll give you an example of what happened like last week when the last body was picked up, the one that did not have the heart. What happened was some members of the community from the neighboring compound, which is Lilanda, somewhere in Lilanda, they walked over to George Compound with a view of touching down the same police force that you're talking about, that people are complaining about, to say it's not adequate, but they need a full-fledged police station. When they got there, the members of the community from George Compound resisted and they chased them. So they now realize how important policing is and the presence of police officers is. Because we realize also that among us, the members of the community, there are criminals that would want to operate in a free environment. And these are the people that mobilize themselves to touch down police posts, to destroy police stations, to even beat up police officers where they can, because they want us to withdraw so that as they carry out their activity, they know to say they don't have any police officers around. But then people are also, they've risen up in arms to say, we are not going to touch down this police post because we need it. And what we've done, again, as Zambia Police, is we've encouraged members of the community in an event where they feel the post that they have or the station that they have is not adequate or it cannot compare to the size of the population in a particular area, they can mobilize themselves using their civic leaders to come up with a structure, of course, with specifications from the police. They come up with that structure, they put everything in place, and then we move in and police and operate from there. So that
I'll
is actually
right
being
there.
Encouraged, and
yeah,
a lot of people have come through.
I'll stop you right there, because how do we expect the citizens to be building their own, facility like police station, probably even hospital, and that kind of, they already pay the tax, and you expect them to build their own, police station? I think that's very unfair, don't you think?
Unfortunately, our situation here is different. As government here comes in to build police stations, but we have what we call community police posts. That can also be built by members of the community. There's nothing wrong with that, as long as there is need. But in an event where government has to come in to supplement, it has always done that and it has never failed.
Well, you say that the a battalion or a group of paramilitary people are camped at a primary school in George Compound, or is it in Ngarume? But if you think about it, camping is a temporary solution. What is the long-term solution for that community?
The long-term solution is already there is a police post there, and just in the neighborhood, in the next compound, there is a police post that is being renovated, the one that was touched down. I think I mentioned initially that members of the community and the building and the business community had come together and they are renovating this police post to make sure that it's completed on time, and then we'll move in as police, as Zambia Police.
Now, have you, probably through your intelligence or investigations so far, been able to establish whether these are murders being carried out by an individual or a group of thugs who are on the loose?
Right now, we are still investigation. We are still investigating, and it will not be right for me to divulge what we've done so far. But then, what I would want to state is that the model of operation has not really been the same. In that, in the first murder involving the four, only one seemed to have been murdered from the scene where the body was found. The other ones, it's like they had been murdered from somewhere else and dumped to places that were closest to where they were living so that they could be identified. As for the last one, the fifth one, they could have murdered him from there because there was a lot of blood flow, and whatever operation they conducted was done from there, because you could see that there were a lot of activities that happened at the scene. Now, for me to say exactly what we are doing as Zambia Police or what we've done as Zambia Police to get hold of the perpetrators, I think that would divulge our investigations, because I realize that a lot of people that are listening, and this is a case of national interest. Everyone else wants to know exactly what is going to be the outcome of this case. So what you ought to know is that as Zambia Police, we are doing a lot to make sure that the perpetrators of these criminal activities are brought to book.
I mean, this is not the first time this is happening in Zambia, especially Lusaka. If you remember, it depends again on how old one is. I think that was in the 70s or 80s. We had the notorious strangler who killed about 13 women. We've gone on to have other characters thereafter. So as Zambia Police, what have you learned from mm-hmm. those previous experiences? Do you also maybe call in officers who probably retired, but you can use the results, who were maybe investigating those cases to come and help with this, or there's some form of knowledge transfer between the old and the new? What did you learn from the past experiences, really?
We're not just handling the case as Zambia Police, but we've appealed to members of the public with information to come through. And to add it all, we've also offered a reward of 50,000 kwacha to anyone who is going to give us information that is going to lead to the successful apprehension of these people. So this case is not just being handled by police officers. It's a case of interest, as I indicated earlier on, and we are hoping that a lot of information is going to flow in. Actually, it's already flowing in, except that we have to see this, because we realize that as much as we've offered this 50,000 kwacha, there are people that would just want to get this money and just come through and give us false information. So whatever information that we are getting, we are busy sieving it to see how credible it is, and eventually pick on one that will successfully lead to the apprehension of the perpetrators. What this means is that it's not just the young people or the retired that you refer to, but it's open to anyone that has the information. And even those that feel we are not doing our work correctly and they have ideas that we can use in order to enhance our policing abilities are welcome, because we've come up with sensitization programs. I actually also wish to mention that the Inspector General of Police last Saturday patrolled all the compounds that are affected, and he was able to mingle with members of the community. They chatted and shared ideas. Some of those ideas that we were given, we've gotten them, and we are using them in investigating these murders. That is to top up on the already expertise that we have.
Obviously, somebody somewhere knows who is behind this. Do you think if you increase mm-hmm. it from 50,000 to some other amount higher, you'd actually get more people coming forward?
Yeah, of course, people have already started coming forward, as I indicated. But then we have to see how credible the information that they're giving us is. I'll give you an example of the Milon brothers. I don't know if you heard about it.
The ones that were
terrorizing members of the community in the Luano Valley.
Yes.
We managed to get those brothers through a reward. Of course, a lot of people came in, but eventually someone with credible information came through and we managed to get rid of those people. So that is exactly what we are doing now. And we are not just sticking on to the 50,000 kwacha. We are also banking on the different ideas that we are getting from people, different information that we are getting from those that who are not even interested in the reward, who just want to make sure that Lusaka becomes a safe haven for everyone.
But I think with the Mylon brothers, if my memory serves me right, I think they were shot dead. So we may never know whether they were actually behind it or not. I mean, extrajudicial killings.
We actually managed to get a lot of information that implicated them. The next time you come to Lusaka, get through to the museum. You see the kind of documentation that we found them with. They even list of people that they had killed. So for those ones, we really got it. We were not wrong. They were the correct people.
Okay, but there's still an issue about extrajudicial killing. But anyway, you know, modern policing must be very different from what it used to be before. What sort of techniques are you are you incorporating in the policing? Is the police training in Zambia really good enough to, you know, to tackle complicated crimes?
Yes, what's happening right now is that the initial training that everyone else gets is basic. After getting the basic 9 months training, we start specializing. People go back for specialized training. And then we've had a lot of stakeholders that have come in where they've seen gaps, they've come in to train our officers. So when it comes to investigations, yes, we've received adequate training in investigating these different kinds of cases.
Well, I'm a fan of crime and investigations. I think you probably watch that sometimes, and you know, sometimes when you actually see these police forces across the world investigating, coming to the bottom of an issue of an investigation, you just think, wow, these guys are doing a very good job. Are we at that level? Because as far as I know, I don't know whether you're already using DNA or you still, you're still using fingerprints and other tool.
Of course, you cannot compare it with the levels in the first world. No, you can't. But for us, we are using what we have to make sure that we investigate these cases, and we are getting there according to our level. So we would not want a situation where we would want to start comparing ourselves with America, with the UK, no. We would want to make use of what is in our disposal, what is at our disposal to investigate these cases. Of course, I'll give an example of what is happening within the service right now. Previously, when we used to investigate cases and it came to issues of DNA, we'd always lift our samples and take them to South Africa. But now, as Zambia Police, we have our own DNA machines that we are using to investigate these cases. So we are always moving a step forward. The most important thing is we don't get back. We are always improving ourselves, making sure that though we don't really get to the level of the Western world, of course, but we are making sure that we keep on improving every day.
Do you still use the Camperwas?
No, we don't do that.
Really?
That's
have
a myth, actually.
Is it?
It is a myth.
Really?
It is a myth. Before I joined the police, I knew was that in every police station, you'd find a Camperwa. But to tell you the truth, I've never seen it. It is a myth.
Okay, well, I would like to come across somebody who's been on the campaign because I know that they've actually existed.
But have you seen it yourself before?
No, I haven't yet been arrested. Okay, well, it's good to hear that they actually no longer exist, and I'll take a word for that. But do you think at the moment, mm-hmm. do you think the Zambia police actually receives adequate funding from the government?
Yes, of course we do. We receive funding for different activities that we conduct as a service. Since we're talking about investigations, also I'll talk about funding meant for operations and investigations. Of course, that we receive. I will not deny that. What we are receiving is adequate.
Now, you did say that you were officer in charge at Libuyu in Livingstone.
Yes.
Yeah, and recently I was talking to somebody who is actually tuned in, who lost a brother in Libuyu under very, mm-hmm. what was termed as very mysterious circumstances. And,
at the hands of the police?
No. But the police were actually supposed to be investigating. This was late last January or late last year. I can't remember very well. Now, they mm-hmm. ordered a post-mortem, and apparently samples have to be taken mm-hmm. to Lusaka. The family, grieving as they were, mm-hmm. they were actually asked to actually fund the trip for the police officer, transport money and lodging to take the specimens to Lusaka. They offered transport as they were driving to Lusaka, but the they refused to say that no. They actually had their own own timetable to follow.
What happened is, if one is investigating a case, what I was saying is if I thought that happens, then it's very unfortunate. But what happens is, if someone is investigating a case and they have to travel out to make a follow-up on such a case, they are paid by the police through the funding that we get from government. It's not actually supposed to be done like that. And I would advise members of that family to see the police commissioner in charge of Southern Province, so that comes to his attention. Probably it never even came to his attention. So let them go and see him.
Well, the frustration for this family is the fact that they haven't heard from the police. Mm-hmm. Much as this happened some months ago, they have not heard the postmortem results. They haven't heard about what happened to the samples and that kind of thing. So should they go to the police commissioner then, as you advise?
Yes, they can go to the commissioner. But what happens in our case is once a postmortem is conducted, the results of the postmortem are not given out by police officers, but they are given out in court. And then the doctor who conducted the postmortem is brought in court to be a witness. He gives evidence in court to say exactly what he found, whether that person died out of the natural cause or it was unnatural. And if it were unnatural, he has to explain exactly what happened, whether the person was strangled or maybe the throat was chopped off or whatever happened. So it's not us who give out the results of the postmortem, but they are given out in court.
But you agree with me that it's the police, Zambia police duty to actually, brief the family every step of the way, and this has not happened.
Well, if it hasn't happened, as to how far the case has gone, the family is still has the right to get to the investigating office and find out exactly how far the case has gone, and they'll be briefed accordingly.
Okay, that's very interesting to know. Now, with the families that have been affected in George Compound and the surrounding areas, as a police service, how are you supporting these families? If you, as anybody, is this where the victim support unit comes in? Has anybody visited any of these families, or it just you pick up the body, take it to UTH, and end of story?
What happens is when it comes to issues of counseling, it has to be voluntary. If the people want some sort of help in terms of counseling, yes, we've got qualified people who can handle that. But what you have to know is our situation here is totally different from yours there, you know, from the British one. It's totally different. At times when you try to talk to these people, you try to counsel them, they feel as though you are teasing them. Some people are not even willing to listen to you as the police. So it has to be a personal thing. If people think we can help that kind of help, we can give that kind of help, we are always ready to do that. And we've done it in so many occasions where people have come through or where we feel that family really needs counseling, we've done it. But in some situations, some families have been very hostile, like the members of the community in George Bingalume Lilanda compound there. When we went to pick the last body, the one whose heart was missing, the first group of officers who went there met a lot of resistance. Members of the community were throwing stones at them. They picked tires and ready to set police officers ablaze. The officers had to go back, and for us to pick up that body, we had to be in full riot gear. So if we are handled like that, then how do we offer something to such members of the community? Because in the first place...
Hello, Mwiti. Have we lost our guest?
Hello. Yes, it looks like we've lost our guest. I shall do the needful and bring her back.
Okay. Do the magic.
Yeah, she was in full flow and pretty interesting topic so far. And okay, while I let you ramble on, I will just do the needful.
You have no respect. You say ramble on.
Let me
ramble on. Let me ramble on. Yeah. For our listeners, tonight our guest is Mrs. Charity Munganga Chanda, who is a Zambia Police spokesperson, talking to us about the recent murders around George Compound, Lilanda, and Zingalume. And she's been telling us that in Zambia, matters that people are calling those murders as ritual murders. By Zambian law, a murder is a murder, and the police have actually offered a 50,000 kwacha reward to anybody who come up with information leading to the successful prosecution of the perpetrators behind these heinous crimes. She actually told us that the residents have been a little bit hostile, obviously because of what's going on. Are you back, Mwiti, so that I stop rambling on?
Yes, I'm back. Now you
All
can
right.
stop talking.
All right. Yeah. Welcome back. Sorry, we lost you. And you were talking about the police having to go and pick up the last body in full riot gear because the residents were irate.
Sorry, you're breaking. You're breaking. Could you just repeat yourself, please?
I'm saying that the last thing you were talking about was that the police had to go and pick up a body, the last body, in full riot gear because the residents were irate and they wanted to attack the police.
Yes, I was saying we had to pick up in full riot gear. Now, if we have to offer counseling, how do we go in? Because it's like these people are not ready to receive that. It's actually not the affected family that are resisting, but the other members of the community, as I indicated earlier on today, there are criminals who are out there who would want to make sure they don't, who would not want to have police presence in the area so that they operate freely. So when they become hostile, they think they can defeat us. But, you know, as police, we don't give up. We usually go back. We went back in riot gear, picked up the body, and went back to patrol the area. Instituted the investigations immediately. Saturday, that was on, it was on Wednesday. Saturday, we were back with the police chief in the area, and we patrolled. And people were even calling us, please come, make sure you patrol every area because we need you. So it's not everyone who doesn't need us. It's just the criminals who don't need us.
Okay. Well, you know, you talked about some of the families don't like to be, you know, to go through counseling. And to me, it seems as if you've given up on everybody. And yet there are people who probably would like to actually undergo counseling, but they don't know that the service is there. So how are you educating the public?
No. We've not given up, and we are not going to give up. I say, for those that are willing, we've handled them, we've offered them the kind of counseling that they should receive, but some have been hostile. So for those that haven't been, we've offered counseling. We even go back to visit them. We make follow-ups.
Okay. For our listeners, tonight we've got Mrs. Charity Munganga Chanda, who is a Zambia Police spokesperson, talking to us about the recent murders in Lusaka. If you've got any burning questions, you can actually call us on the UK number. Number is 011-4360-1992. The UK number again is 011-4360-1992. And for our listeners across the pond in the United States of America, the number to reach us on is 00134-783-8865. The USA number again is 00134-783-8865. For our listeners in Southern Africa, you can reach us on a South African number, which I think will be a little bit cheaper for you, which is 00271108-388-69. The Southern African listeners, it's 00271108-388-69. You can also post your questions via Twitter at Crossfire Radio 1. At Crossfire Radio 1 is a Twitter handle. And also you can post your questions on our Facebook page. Mrs. Chanda, moving away slightly the murders.
Yes.
One of the burning actually issues the public have with the Zambia Police is the level of corruption. Do you actually acknowledge this problem exists and is quite widespread?
Yes, the problem exists, but not as portrayed by members of the public. We realize that we have a few rotten eggs amongst us. But what we've done is everyone who's been implicated to any form of corruption has been dealt with according to the provisions of the law. There's no police officer who's been protected by being involved in any form of corruption. So what we've done is that at Zambia Police, we've got what we have, what we call Integrity Committee Unit. What that unit does is it helps to fight corruption within the system. So we've come up with different programs where people go out, that is police officers, they go out in all police stations and posts, sensitizing officers on how to conduct themselves, how to be professional without really getting involved in any form of corruption. And this has worked in reducing the levels of corruption within the system.
How long has this integrity unit been operational? I'm hearing it for the first time, but obviously it's probably just I just missed it. And how does somebody?
It's been in existence since 2006.
And how does somebody actually report to the to this unit? And what information would they be looking for?
Okay. In areas where this unit does not exist, I'll give you an example of very remote districts which have small police stations or posts. We don't just rely on the unit itself, but the officers in charge of all police stations act as integrity committee members. So anyone with a complaint can see the officer in charge of that police station. And if the officer in charge is also compromised, we have other wings such as anti-corruption commission, where such an officer can be reported to, or the provincial commissioner in charge of provincial commissioner. So or any supervisor. So it depends on the level of satisfaction. If someone is not satisfied with the officer in charge, they can see the commissioner, or they can go out of the police system and go to the anti-corruption commission or the police public complaint authority, which is an independent body altogether.
Do you have a lot of people reporting corruption cases, or probably people have just given up to say, oh, well, corruption has become part of our lives, so, well, even if I report it, it won't go anywhere?
People have not given up. People have come through to report. We have had police officers who are incarcerated because of corruption. So no one is being protected, and there's no special law that protects police officers. So any police officer who is involved in any form of crime, anything that makes him not to be professional, can be arrested or can be disciplined according to what offense they will have committed. If it's something that can be handled administratively, it's handled as such. And if it's a criminal case, that officer has to be arrested. There's nothing like being protected.
Okay. Erica, we'll have to bring in a caller.
Okay.
Caller, you're live on Crossfire. Your name, please.
My name is Hilda Mulenga.
Oh, thank you, Hilda, for calling. You're live on Crossfire. Your question, please.
Thank you. Hello.
Yes, go ahead, Hilda. I think there's a bit of feedback. I think there's a computer on your side on. But if I get somebody to switch it off and then continue with your question, please.
Okay.
Oh, gosh, that's terrible feedback.
Just a minute. Let me turn it off. Sorry.
Okay, we'll just wait for Hilda for a second to actually switch off her computer. Then she can pose her question to Mrs. Chanda. That is terrible feedback.
Hello. Yes, Hilda.
Hello. I'm so pleased to have the Mrs. Chanda online. Thank
yes.
you. Hello.
Hello. Go ahead, Hilda.
Thank you. I'm so pleased to have Mrs. Chanda on. I just wanted to find out what's happening with our police force, especially when it comes to apprehending a culprit, because we've been seeing videos online where, you know, police officers are really, really fighting with an offender. Do we have restraining procedures?
Fantastic. I think I got that. Okay, Hilda, Mrs. Chanda, please, your comment on that.
I think I must have gotten her. She would like to find out if we have any training procedures in apprehending perpetrators of crime, right?
As well as restraining procedures as well.
Yes, that is there. But, you know, in every institution, there are people that are weak at following procedures. You find such in all institutions, be it in media houses, be it in hospitals, you still find them. But still, it still gets back to what I just indicated earlier, or to say, we deal with them positively, or we have them in skill. So in an event where, like you talked about the videos, we've had video circulating of officers maybe bettering somebody, those officers have been arrested. In an event where we feel this person procedure, maybe they didn't know how to... just handle them in a professional way, we send them back for retraining.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm sure he would have got that. Eric, please do pick it up.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mwiti, and thank you, Hilda, for posing that question. Mrs. Chanda, the traffic police are especially notorious for taking bribes at roadblock. I was in Zambia last February, and I did witness it, and apparently a roadblock is now termed as an ATM for traffic officers. How much revenue is the police Davis? How much revenue is the police Davis losing? And by the way, on my way to the airport, we were actually stopped, and a bribe taken from the guy who was driving me to the airport because he was on a speed limit. Mm-hmm. And you actually go to the patrol, the person in charge of the patrol in the patrol car to go and give the money without a receipt. How much money has the police service lost through such practices? And what are you doing about it? Because if you haven't got money, they even give you a personal mobile phone to actually contact them when you have money the following day.
Oh, my God. I would not want to dwell on the figures, but what we've done is we've been doing a lot of sensitization programs to make sure people don't part away with money without getting a government receipt. And of course, those that listen to us and those that would want to adhere to the provisions of the law have always demanded for their receipts. We've had cases, yes, where officers have been bribed, but then corruption is a two-way thing. It has to start with you. So if you offer the traffic officer, and this is a wicked traffic officer who gets the money and does not give you a receipt and you walk away, it means both of you will have committed a crime. So what we are doing is we are sensitizing members of the community not to part away with any coin without being given a receipt. What they ought to know is the money that is given to those traffic officers is not individual. It should not go into individual pockets. That is government revenue, and it has to be accounted for. But for those officers that have been reported for being corrupt, those have been dealt with accordingly. So as Zambia Police, we don't tolerate corruption at all. That's why we've appealed to members of the community, to members of the public, to report all corrupt officers, not just traffic officers. Be it officers who are prosecuting cases in the court, be it those that are by the reception, be it those from the BSU, any police officer, as long as they are in uniform, are supposed to be professional. Anyone who is found wanting is supposed to be arrested.
Mr. Chanda, when I was growing up, I remember every police officer had a number, I think somewhere on their chest, so you actually knew you could actually call their post number. You don't see that anymore. Why?
Mm-hmm. We actually have them. Yes, we have a few who do not have, but the kind of uniforms that we have is for chief inspectors and below, that is from chief inspectors to constable, they're supposed to have numbers. From assistant superintendent up to the topmost, that is the IG, they're supposed to wear name tags. So we encourage our officers to have those tag bits, a name tag or number tag on them at all times. But even in an event where an officer has no name tag or number tag, just indicate where you found them at what time. For example, if you were going to the airport, as you stated earlier on, you just call, there are 12 numbers that we usually give out. You just call to say, there's this officer that I've met at a point located between this place and this place at certain time. We'll be able to know which officers were there and we'll be able to investigate. Actually, what we've done is we've encouraged members of the community to use any gadgets that they have to capture or corrupt officers. So as officers, we are not safe to get involved in any form of criminality simply because we feel members of the public could be scared to walk to a police station and report. Members of the public these days are using social media. Maybe I'll be receiving a bribe from you, someone who captured me, and that clip will go viral. And just that will be evidence enough to have me arrested. So we don't hide anymore. We encourage members of the public to report. Those who can't report can use any gadget that they have to expose such an officer.
I mean, you are the police spokesperson and the media person too. Is Zambia Police on Twitter? Because I find Twitter a very good tool. Is Zambia Police on Twitter? Because Twitter is a very good tool to engage the public.
We are not... We are not on Twitter, but we have a website, www.zambiapolice.com. We also have WhatsApp pages, like the one we use to disseminate statements and anything that's happening in the police to the media. We call it Zambia Police Update. We use that as well. But we are not on Twitter, so that in itself is enough for us. We also have a contact address where we have all the media houses listed up, and whatever it is that we'd want to communicate with the media, it's just like a click of the button and it goes to off. Our lines are also not private.
Sorry? You've got no plans of going on to Twitter.
We have with William at the time.
Eric, I can hear Ms. Munganga very, very well. Yes, if you can continue.
Okay.
Yes.
Now,
so I was saying our lines are also not private at all. We give them out anytime, so anyone can report at any time. And then there's a line that has just the image that we are trying to publicize as much as possible, because we realize that the emergency line, that's the 911, a lot of people abuse it. Some people just call, insult the police, or maybe give a false alarm. Meanwhile, there's somebody who's in dire need of that line at somewhere who can't get through. So there's a number that we've always given out. I know there are Zambians that are listening to me right now. It's 0979-180007. So what happens with that number is the moment someone calls it, it goes to Lusaka Central. And then the people at Lusaka Central will immediately get in touch with police officers on patrol or a police post or station that is closest from to where the call is being made from. And these are even, if anything, it's even more reliable than the emergency one, because the emergency one is abused.
Miss Chanda, this is Muwaiti. About recruitment.
Yeah.
You know, my question is on recruitment of the police.
You know,
at Lilai. how, you know, somebody has posted on our Facebook page, how transparent is, you know, is this process, and, you know, how much confidence should people have in this process, bearing in mind that a lot of times, a lot of times senior police officers have had their own preferred names put on the list. Whether he knows that or not, I do not know. But, you know, how much can people trust your process in terms of recruiting new recruits?
Okay, yeah, that process is very transparent. What we usually do is we advertise and give out the entry qualifications. Now, what people ought to know is that jobs these days have been very difficult to get. So you'd find that at Zambia Police, we only have 5 training schools. That is Lilai, Paramilitary, and Kampinsa. And we can only take 500 at a time in each of these training schools. So you'd find that maybe like last year, we had like 17,000 applicants, out of which we could only pick 1,500. Now, even if we were to say 5 credits or better, we have people who have distinctions, who have 6 points applying. So why should we get someone who has 5 credits and leave out this person who has distinctions? So people have come through to say, no, me, I applied, I met the qualifications, but I was not picked. And it's not just the academic qualifications that we look at. We also look at the age. We also look at the medical part, the physical part. You find that maybe, okay, we start with the physical exercise. We would make them run, for example, maybe in bunches of 10, and then we pick the first 3. So if we pick the first 3 out of 17,000, how many are we going to have? So we still have to sieve them further by subjecting them to an aptitude test. And a lot of them fail in those aptitude tests. So even if someone had, for example, distinctions and they failed to make it in the aptitude test, there's no way we can pick them up. So we go for the best. And this whole procedure has been transparent. Yes, we know they've always been complaints, but there's no way we can pick everyone. Where are we going to accommodate them? We don't have the facilities. Our facilities are limited.
Right. How many police do you have in Zambia, you know, as a total?
We have, as for now, we have 17,400, and we have 1,500 recruits on training.
Okay. Would you say that 17,000 policemen in a country with a with a population of about 15, 16 million, would you say that was enough? To have peace, order, and all those things that come with it.
We are actually aiming at having 28,000. So that is what we are aiming at. And with the availability of resources, we will definitely get there. No, 27,000, sorry, not 28, 27,000.
27,000. Okay. How do you hope to achieve this by building more training schools, or are you going to use the same schools that you're saying are not enough at the moment?
What we used to do previously is we'd have 2 intakes per year. But what you have to realize is we also have people from other Home Affairs departments, such as immigration and drug enforcement, training, using the same facilities for training. So what the government has done is that they are trying to build more training schools so that we can have more numbers at once. Already we have land that has been allocated to us in Chibombo District for a new training school to be constructed. There's another one also which is going to be constructed on the Copper Belt. So we are hoping that with the coming up of these new training, police training schools, we'll be recruiting more, and then the numbers, of course, will go up.
Okay. My last question before I bring in my colleague, Eric, is, Ms. Chanda, I think my biggest problem with the police in Zambia at the moment is the fact that just under 5 years ago, anybody and everybody in the MMD could do anything and get away with it because they were in power. If they did anything now, you would arrest them. Right now, we are in a scenario where the PF and the PF cadres and those that are in government could literally do anything, fight with the police and do anything they wanted, like we've seen on those videos posted online, and they would get away with it. Now, where, at which point do you draw a line as police and say, look, we are going to set the record straight and just be the police and police everybody from an independent point of view, not based on the fact that you are coming from a ruling party or coming from the opposition? At which point are you going to be fair to all Zambians based on the fact that they are just citizens within the country?
And that's very interesting, because there's no law which protects any individual who commits a crime simply because they belong to a certain party. The people that we deal with as Zambia police are criminals, despite their party affiliation. Once someone commits a crime, we will not look at where they're coming from, we will not look at their social status, we will not look at their political affiliation. We'll deal with a criminal, a suspect who will have committed such a crime, and deal with them according to the provisions of the law. So for now, that is mayor talk. We don't deal with political parties. We deal with suspects and criminals.
Okay. Has there been an official complaint that has been lodged in with the police regarding the cadres who stormed Ndola? What do you call it now? Is it the Simon Kapwepwe Airport, I think, in Ndola, when a politician was about to land and he could not be allowed to land? That could have ended up in a death, really. Has there been an official complaint that has been lodged in, and have those people who stormed and breached the security of an airport been tracked down? So that we do not have a repeat of such a scenario.
I would not want to state a particular case, but what you ought to know is each case that has been reported, even those that have not been reported, where we have evidence to say there are people that were involved in breaking the law, we've always moved in. We have not protected anybody. We've always moved in, we've instituted investigations, arrested the perpetrators, and taken them to court.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Let me just bring in my colleague, Eric, to just wrap it up. Eric, please do come in.
Thank you very much, Mwiti. Mrs. Chanda, a listener from Plymouth, Bernadette Njovu, would actually like to get your WhatsApp number, because she has a video of how the police unlawfully arrested somebody, and what you are going to do with this video. Is that something you can, or is it the same number that you gave us earlier?
Yeah. Please give it out. I don't have a problem with people getting my number. I can still give it out. It's +260 975715476. +260 260 975 Hello. Hello. Yes. Can you hear you? Yeah. So I said 0975 715 576. That's my WhatsApp number, so they can WhatsApp that video, or anything else that they would want to talk about, or anything that they are not clear on, they can WhatsApp me. I'll still get back to them.
All right, I'll pass on the number. Now, Mrs. Chanda, is it police rule that fines are supposed to be paid on the spot when, say, especially traffic
What happens is it depends on the amount that is involved. We are not supposed to to get anything over 540 kwacha. Anything less than that, we can get an issue a receipt. Those cases that go beyond that are supposed to be taken to court.
Okay, but
and then there are some cases that are not just finable. There are cases that are not finable. For example, causing death by dangerous driving.
Yeah, but
no
one
is supposed to pay at the police station.
Yeah.
Sorry?
So, what I wanted to know is, if I was caught speeding, do I have to pay to the police officer, or I can go and pay at the police station at my own convenience?
If you have the money and you don't want to be inconvenienced, you can pay just there and then, and you'll be issued with a receipt. But if you don't have the money, we are supposed to get your address. You are given 7 days in which to pay, failure to which you'll be taken to court. Now, the problem that we have here is that some people are of no fixed abode. Maybe the vehicle they are using is not even theirs. So it becomes so difficult for us to get hold of them. But it's not a problem for someone to just accept to say they will pay after 7 days, and in 7 days they come, they go to the nearest police station, they produce their charge sheet, pay the fine, be issued with a receipt, and off they go.
Now, I was looking at your website last night, and I saw that very soon police will be accepting electronic payments. How soon will this be?
Yes. We are working on that. There's a company that has been contracted to make all those arrangements and work on our system to make sure we actually don't handle any form of cash as police officers.
Okay, so is this are you trying to sort of cut down on the people paying money to police officers, which ends up going into their pockets rather than the government coffers?
That's what we are trying to avoid.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, lastly, before we actually wrap up, we've got elections coming up in August. What preparations are you making for the police service?
Sorry. Okay. For us, we've been preparing for a long time because we realize that the period in which we are going into is very critical. So with the help of stakeholders, we've been conducting a lot of training that is policing for elections. So it has started with the top brass, the supervisors. It's been trickling down to the lowest rank, and this is not just happening in Lusaka, but throughout. Then we have a pamphlet that is being distributed on policing for elections. So as Zambia Police, we are very ready. We've been engaging stakeholders. And in the recent past, we had a meeting with political leaders where we encouraged them to talk to their cadres so that they restrain them from getting involved in violence, because we realize that it's in times like this that a lot of violence tends to happen because of differences in political views. So we've engaged the political leaders, we've engaged the community leaders, as well as religious leaders to just talk to members of the community. And not only that, we have a theater club called Quasi Theater Club. It comprises of police officers. So what we do is we go into communities where we try to sensitize people using theater, and this has received a lot of positive response. We've also used the media, both print and electronic, to sensitize members of the community on issues and the importance of free elections. So as Zambia Police, we are ready to police the elections.
Would you agree with me that tear gassing a political meeting by a party, you know, a position leader in an indoor meeting is error of judgment on the part of the police?
I didn't get it.
I'm saying, would you agree with me that tear gassing an indoor meeting being addressed by an opposition leader is actually an error of judgment on the part of the police?
Tear gassing is what?
Eric says, the tear gassing of a meeting by an opposition political leader, how that sits wrong with everything else that has to be done, because I'm sure if that was a sitting, somebody from the sitting government, would that meeting have been tear gassed?
We don't tear gas political leaders. Why we tear gas, the people that we tear gas are the cadres, trying to restrain them, trying to disperse them. I'll give you an example of what happened at one of the police stations in Lusaka, that is Woodlands, when we had summoned one of the deputy presidents of one of the political political parties. The cadres started stoning the police station. Now, because we could not use live ammo, tear gas was the best option. So it's not the political leaders that we target.
I think Eric is alluding to the video that has circulated on social media where, the former vice president, Nevis Mumba, was addressing a meeting in Eastern Province, and that ended up being tear gassed, and we could see him running out of that hall.
What happens, Eric, is in Zambia we are all public gatherings are guided by the Public Order Act.
Okay.
In an event where we are not notified as police, there's no way we can allow a public procession to go on, because that in itself is a source of anarchy, because we know what comes out of it. So in an event where a political leader wants to have a meeting, or not just a political leader or anyone wants to have a public procession, they have to notify the police 7 days before the actual hosting of the event, so that we police such an event. Why we police the event is because you may have cadres from two different parties. They don't go actually there to just listen to their leader. What they go there to do is to cause confusion. That's why we make sure that we are on the ground to make sure that there is peace during such a procession. So we don't aim at individuals. If the procedure is not followed, there's no way we can allow it to go ahead.
Okay. Miss Chanja.
Hold your breath. The Public Order Act is the most misunderstood piece of legislation, especially by the police. You are telling me that somebody has to notify, not get permission. Do you mean get permission or notify really in your statement? Because if I tell you that...
I'm not telling you.
Go ahead.
But do you realize that there are a lot of issues that come out of these meetings when we are not there? When police presence is not there, do you realize that there's a lot of confusion, a lot of violence that goes on?
Well, in this case, why didn't the police just engage the people to say, okay, folks, you didn't notify us, or we didn't give you permission?
No. We don't operate like that. Every country has rules and regulations that have to be followed. And if our legislation says the provisions of the Public Order Act have to be followed, and then this political leader just stands up today, no, because I'm a political leader and it's a notification, I can just do whatever I want. We are not going to allow that. Because as police, our role is to make sure that there's law and order during meetings, and not just during meetings, but there's peace also and security in the country. So if people start just standing up and just start holding meetings anyhow without notifying us, then they'll start hacking each other. And once they start hacking each other, it's the image of the country and the security of the country that's going to be at stake.
But do you have to use force to actually engage? I mean, I think you are professional people. You can actually engage
We've engaged them before. And when we engage them, we don't just come to, we just gas them just there and then no. We engage them. We talk to them. No, you didn't notify us. So in short, this is an unlawful assembly. And an unlawful assembly is an offense under the Penal Code of the Republic of Zambia.
Mrs. Chanda, my question is, and I'm sorry, I'm butting in, but my question is, most of the time, you know, the reason given by the police for not allowing meetings to go ahead is that we do not have enough manpower to be at your meeting.
Mm-hmm.
But when people have defied, you know, these meetings have gone ahead, and the police have been mobilized in large numbers to be able to bring down any such meeting. But also, on the other hand, I'm being apolitical because I don't belong to any political party. I'm just comparing. When MMD was in power. They could actually organize a protest or take to the streets and talk about something within hours, and police had no problem with it.
That doesn't happen. Whatever public procession that you've heard of that with police, we've been informed about them. We've been notified about them, and we plan. Why we say we don't have manpower to police such an event, probably there will be another activity going on somewhere else. So there's no way we can have, for example, two public processions in one place, because that in itself is a source of anarchy. And when we talk to these people, once they give us a notification and we tell them we're not able to police such an event, we tell them to come up with an alternative date. It's not like we call off. We have no powers to call off.
Okay.
We ask them to come up with an alternative date.
Okay. Fantastic.
Yeah,
okay.
And that's what we've always done.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. As we wind up, I stumbled across the Zambia Police strategic direction, which I found quite interesting, which says to prevent and detect crime and enforce the law firmly and fairly in order to create a safe and peaceful environment for the social and economic development for all, which is quite interesting. So as we wind up, Mrs. Chanda, I'm sure you've got a message for Zambians as well as probably the police service. I don't know whether you're police force or police service.
We are a service. In the new constitution, we are a service. We used to be a force. Now we are a service.
Okay.
But you're still using force. Okay, fine. So,
no.
So, a message to the police service as well as the Zambians at large.
Our message to all the Zambians, and including those that are listening to me from outside Zambia, is that as police, we cannot operate in isolation. The most important thing that to come in hand with.
Hello, Mwete. I cannot hear Mrs. Chanda.
So, in short, we connect with each other.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Sorry, Eric. I missed a question from America that has. I've got a caller online who's. So, this will be the completely last call.
I hope.
My eyes went off the screen completely, and I think let me bring in Cletus, and that will be the last question. Cletus, you are live on Crossfire. Your question, please.
Yes, thank you very much, gentlemen, and thank you very much, Ms. Chanda. She has answered a lot of questions, and I know we don't have time. I have one question for her. You know, she said that they follow the law. To enforce, for example, the Public Order Act, you know. This is what the Public Order Act makes the police look. It makes the police look very inept because that piece of law is very, very archaic. And it's something that was used by the colonialists. That's why they crafted the Public Order Act. So it's a law that was meant to subdue the people of Zambia who wanted independence. They couldn't organize, they couldn't gather, they couldn't do anything. Now UNIP took over, and they used that against every other voice that wanted a change in Zambia. MMD did the same. As the police, why don't you advise the lawmakers to say, like, this law is making you look really, really, really bad?
Hello, Mwete. What have you done to Mrs. Chanda? Hello, Mwete? Hello. Wow, I don't know what's happened to my co-host and Mrs.
Yeah, but did you hear me?
Oh yes, I heard you loud and clear. But I'm just struggling to connect to Mwete as well as the guest.
Sure,
Mwete, are you there? We'll wait for him to.
He dropped off.
Yeah, I wait for him to come back. Cletus, that's a very good question because
yes.
If you remember very well, the PF also campaigned on the premise that they are actually going to do away with the Public Order Act.
Public Order. Yes.
Yeah. When they came into power.
Once they got in power, all these politicians forgot how they were harassed using that same piece of legislation. You know.
Well, they found it very useful, which is very sad. You're right to say that it actually makes the police service very bad and probably very unprofessional and quite partisan too.
On one hand, you know, the politicians who are in power, and I'm not just talking about the PF. The politicians who are in power, they can move around and mobilize. Say, oh, I'm a minister of communication. Anytime I can organize a trip and I can organize people. And I know the police don't do anything to disrupt that, you know. But once an opposition person say, like, oh, let's gather in my house, it becomes an issue. You know,
exactly.
It doesn't look good for our democracy. It doesn't look good for, you know, the police too.
Well, sometimes you actually come to think that do we have a different interpretation of democracy in our country? Because if you actually compare it to some, I know that our democracy is not really that mature, but at this stage in life, I think it's supposed to resemble some, you know, some mature democracies. So sometimes you wonder, really, is this the way a democracy is supposed to go?
You know, I actually, like on this issue of the Public Order, I see that the opposition, too, have to share the blame. You know, they have MPs there. Nobody has ever introduced, you know, a bill to repeal that. You know, I don't know.
Exactly.
Not
because,
even
an
attempt. You know, if they had attempted and then the other people say, like, you can't repeal that, they'll definitely look bad.
You know, I actually failed to understand, you know, to actually come around to, you know, understand what Mrs. Chanda was sharing with us, because she actually said that they are supposed to inform us. You know, if I were to inform you, I'll just, it's a FYI for your information. and you don't have to do anything about it.
Of course, it just doesn't make sense. You know, that is the Chiruba people who made that twist on the Public Order Act. You know, they say that, before it used to be permission. They twist the word and it still doesn't make any meaning at all, you know?
Yeah.
They just twisted the word from, you know, seeking permission to informing. And yet the police, when they're not informed or they're not, it's the same thing. It doesn't give a democracy a good picture. People are supposed to be free to gather and share information wherever they want. It's their country, you know?
Yeah, I mean, given this background, I mean, how do you think, the level, the playing field, how level do you think the playing field is going to be? Because obviously, PF as a ruling party is actually quite keen to sort of hold on to power.
And,
you know, if you're a party in government, you probably you've got sort of
It goes back to what we always say. Our institutions are very, very weak because, you know, the Electoral Commission has these very, very bad laws too, rules that, you know, nobody can start campaigning. Right now, it's officially, you know, unlawful to campaign. And yet the elections are in 4 or 5 months. It just doesn't make sense.
You know what? For us to actually broadcast on Thursday, we do a lot of background work, as you may know, and we try to look for suitable guests and that kind of thing. If you talk to the PF ministers, half the time they are actually, you know, traveling around the country. Oh, I'll be in this part and this part. I'll be this part and, you know, presenting tractors there, visiting schools there. And to me, that is actually campaigning, if you think about it. You know, it doesn't take a genius to know that these guys are already in the campaign mode.
if we have to put, you know, our country first, we just have to condemn whatever is not right. You know, that's how progressive we are going to be as a people. And the answer that Ms. Chanda was giving was like, you know, she's satisfied on, you know, whatever is going on. And as a young woman, she's supposed to know better.
Oh, well, I guess sometimes, you know. All right. Is that Mwete, are you back? Probably not. I probably totally lost him anyway. But, well, I guess, you know, sometimes, you know, one of the things I know that I couldn't have gotten an answer, I didn't bother asking her.
Yes.
It's how much orders do they actually get from the, you know, from government, from the appointing officers, appointing ministers and that kind of thing. You know, obviously, you can't get an answer for that, but I just know that, I think there may be a degree of orders that come from the top.
They are supposed to be there, and you know, before we had a discussion where we said, is it just also in order that the president appoints these people? I don't know, because then they all the appointing authorities some kind of unnecessary loyalty.
What's the best way to actually, especially when it comes to, like, for instance, maybe the Inspector General, even the commanders of the Air Force, the commander of the Army, the commanders of the Air Force. What is the best way of actually appointing these people so that they actually don't have, think they don't owe the appointing authorities something.
In some counties here in the United States, they get the authority from the communities, and then there should be a link to politicians somehow, like, you know, the commissioners are appointed by the president or by the governor, by the state governor, but the inspector general doesn't have to come from political appointment. Now that gives him some leverage of neutrality when they want to enforce the law, especially if it's perpetrated by a politician.
Yeah. Well, I guess that will always be the difference between our developing democracy in in our countries and what's happening in the West. However, having said that, I think South Africa showed the way over the you know the Constitution Court about the Nkandla scandal.
Yes.
I think it did actually show that we probably could do things differently.
We have had examples in Zambia too, where we had that judge who reversed the sentence of was it Kambarage? You know, where a judge go ahead.
Go ahead.
If you remember that case was in, I think
yes,
in,
I do.
1991, the judge was yes. You know, they had to reverse. They had to make a murder an offense that somebody can pay, was it 10,000 kwacha by that time. And then this judge said, no, he can't have this. And his name was, I think, Clever Musumali or something like that. And he sentenced the guy to death, like it was supposed to be with any other criminal murderer. You know, so our institutions in Zambia just need to be strengthened. The structures we actually do have, just that they are so dependent on it. Yes.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Peter, thank you very much for coming in. These guys, and looks like I'm not getting it back. His guy is on an island somewhere, so it's probably.
No, you guys you're doing a great job always. You know, you make us informed.
Thank you very much for listening.
You're
thank
welcome.
You, Ted.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
To our listeners, this has been a Crossfire broadcast coming to you from United Kingdom, and it's been Eric Ijovo here in London, and Mwete Momba, who is on some island of the south coast somewhere. That's probably the problem why he's having problems connecting to me. And tonight we had Mrs. Charity Munganga Chanda, who is the spokesperson for the Zambia police, talking to us about initially about the recent murders in Lusaka, and then we went on to talk about corruption as well as how the Zambia police is preparing for the fourth coming elections. She gave us a lot of insight about what the police is actually doing in terms of trying to sort of apprehend the perpetrators of the crimes in George Compound area. And she also gave us the police number that listeners can, or rather citizens can actually contact the police on if they actually suspected that a police officer is engaged in corrupt practices. And that number is for the listeners in Zambia is 09791-8007 for listeners outside Zambia. You can add 260 to that. And she also gave us her personal number, which she says that you've got the right to actually get in touch with her on anything regarding police, and the number is 260-975-715-476, 260-975-715-476. And if you think you've got a policing issue, you can get hold of her personally as a police spokesperson, as well as the police number which I gave you earlier. Thank you very much for listening in tonight, and we'll actually meet again on Thursday, same time, when we bring you another exciting show. And for me, Eric Ndjobo in London, and on behalf of Mweti Momba, somewhere on the South Coast, good night and God bless.